Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
1 year ago, it became the most infamous street corner in America. Now, George Floyd Square is a place of reflection and prayer.
Come! George Floyd! God needs you! He needs your testimony! I'm not gonna let you go!
Plus,
there's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
We catch up with Bill and Kate Isles, or Kate and Bill, who've been riding out the pandemic with 60 straight weeks of online concerts. All that in a regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
There's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
That song is coming your way, courtesy of Bill and Kate Isles, who've been riding out the pandemic with 60 straight weeks of online concerts. We'll catch up with them shortly. But first, 1 year ago, it became the most infamous street corner in America.
Come, George Floyd!
Now, George Floyd Square is a place of reflection and prayer.
God needs you! He needs your testimony! I'm not gonna let you go!
Also, a longtime Superior activist shares her thoughts on how far the nation has come on race relations in the past year. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. 1 year ago this week, in the time it took to upload a video, the Minneapolis intersection of Chicago Avenue and East 38th Street became the most recognizable and infamous street corner in the world. It's the spot in front of Cup Foods where George Floyd breathed his last, his pleas heard by onlookers and eventually everyone in the world, yet ignored by the police officers pinning him down. Following his death at this site were the sounds of protests, then violence and destruction, from which South Minneapolis and many other areas have not yet fully recovered. Nor has the nation fully addressed the racial reckoning sparked by the murder. But there is hope, at least tentatively so, following the unprecedented conviction a month ago of former police officer Derek Chauvin. It's visible in the faces of many visiting the site, now named George Floyd Square. Last Sunday, I was among them, in a constant stream of pedestrians on the streets now closed to traffic for two blocks in all directions. Most prominent is the giant face of George Floyd. On the blacktop in front of it, red and green letters demand justice for Dante Wright, the young black man shot to death just 10 miles away from the courthouse where Chauvin was being tried by a police officer claiming to have mistaken her gun for a taser. Sitting on a stoop is Tony Smith, an area resident who's collecting money for sleeping bags for homeless people. I stopped to ask his thoughts.
1 year later, how far have we come?
Quite a ways. This here opened up a lot of people's eyes, not only here in Minneapolis, but all the way around the world. They finally really realized and seeing what's going on, not only in the community, but in the police force as well. Mm-hmm. They've been getting away with it for a long period of time. Now it's catching up with them, not only here in Minnesota, but other states as well. And, you know, we don't need stuff like that. You know, if you hire to uphold the law, uphold it. You know, if you got problems against different colors of skins or whatever, don't deal with it on the job, you know, deal with it some other way, you know. So, but I look back, that's the city's fault from not doing a thorough investigation into their hiring process.
On the corner is Cup Foods, the convenience store where George Floyd is alleged to have passed a counterfeit $20 bill that began the incident and that reportedly was never collected as evidence. The store is doing a brisk business, but off to the side, Butchie Austin may be cutting into their soft drink sales.
Want some good drinks?
He's a resident of the immediate neighborhood, handing out bottles of water and pop for free to whoever wants one. He also offers his opinions.
We're here a year later because we're still looking for justice to be served. And I know that you're welcome. We know that the Derek Chauvin trial got us, progress with accountability with Derek Chauvin. But
there was a conviction.
In reality, there's a lot more that we're trying to achieve. We, as a community, have decided there needs to be restorative justice in this area, and that is because the city killed a man. And so the city needs to be responsible, not the city, but the state and the county and anybody, other governing bodies that contributed to the injustice that was done here to George Floyd.
Do you think we have gotten the answers, that we'll ever have the answer of exactly what happened? We know the prosecution concentrated on Chauvin's acts, and that these were acts that were murder, and they caused the death. But what got us to that place in the first place? If you look at it largely, society or the actual individual?
It is, policing in America is out of control, and anyone who believes anything different has got a veil over their eyes and is choosing not to see what has been perpetually wrong since the inception of policing. And most people know that policing in its inception was designed to help control the runaway slave population. And here, fast forward, here we are 400 years later, and trying to turn policing into this quote-unquote public safety or law enforcement. And frankly, it's built on really poor foundations. And so there's issues that are deeper than just a bad cop taking a man's life. There's where the system is designed to recruit and to elevate and even sometimes praise behavior that is not consistent with what people would believe is serving, protecting.
Well, Officer Lane, he was 4 days on the force.
Absolutely.
And within 20 seconds, he pulls the gun.
And yelling expletives. And it's supposed to be, you're innocent until proven guilty, due process, all the things that they say. But in this situation, we saw it on video where he ran up on George Floyd with the gun pulled and yelling expletives, and that's not a way to serve your community. And it's not as mean as community. I mean, that's the other part, too. It is like, Officer Lane does not live here. So,
also chatting with Butchie Austin and then watching the outdoor church service are Ruth and Samuel Malari. They're married, she's white and he's black, and residents of the neighborhood a couple of miles away. They also stop at the memorial in the center of the square, festooned with flowers, along with signs and pictures of others shot by police or taken before their time. One of them hits close to home.
The one little section over there is a memorial to Imez, right? He was a childhood friend of our daughter.
Yeah. You think we'll ever have the
I asked them the same question, exactly, if they thought the details beyond the actual killing would ever be revealed.
In my mind, from the very beginning, I have thought that something more was behind. For four cops to be needed to deal with a $20 counterfeit, maybe. So there was something, it seemed sort of, premeditated almost. I don't know.
But I think some good things are going to come out of this, if they really do their job and go back and do a different training and hold those who do things responsible, I think that will help for them to think twice before they do something bad, so.
And this is him, that's I'm always the more pessimistic one, unfortunately. But I think, unless white people, white people need to acknowledge that there really is systemic racism, and it might not be my personal fault, but to keep pretending like there's nothing there is just like that is a barrier to moving forward. A lot of people in my rural area where I grew up, I didn't do anything to you, I don't know why you're taking this out, and or to use the the term privilege. People don't like to hear that because I didn't have anything growing up. Right, but you don't have to worry about being dead at the end of a traffic stop. So I actually am hopeful. But maybe he's more hopeful than I am.
Okay. Nicole Etta of Minneapolis shares that guarded optimism.
I would say we have a lot more ways to go, but I love how every community is being supportive of the Black community right now. I love how the state of Minnesota hasn't taken this down. They let it stay a sacred spot. So that's showing a lot of progress in itself. But we still have a long ways to go. But progress is being made.
Her main purpose in coming was bringing her friend, Kingsley Dwana of North Dakota, and paying their respect.
I just wanted him to see it before he goes back home.
Well, we are just here to pay tribute to George Floyd, because me, for once, I haven't been here since he was killed. So my girlfriend took me here so we could come see this. It's like a memory. It's like a memory for his memory. Yeah.
Come on, it's your day. It's your time. You don't have to spend another sleepless night. Come on, come on, come on. We're deliberately waiting on you. God needs you. He needs your testimony. I'm not going to let you go. Bless God, His love. I'm on this corner. I'm going to continue to pray.
The racial reckoning a year after George Floyd's death is also being examined here at home. One of the strongest voices is that of Superior's Kim Young. She joins me now from her home in Superior. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Thank you.
So how far have we come?
Well, I agree with several of our leaders in the Black community to where this one incident of George Floyd has made more impact on the fight for social justice and police reform than the riots back when Rodney King verdict came down. On the other hand, it's complicated things because we now have a political administration that is doing damn good lip service to the cause of social justice and racial equality, but we have yet to see some definitive on the ground, move it forward action come out of this administration. And I know it's going to take a minute. Our voting rights are under attack again. Our constitutional rights are under attack. Our very way of life is in a crucible right now that is teetering on the brink of change or falling into the abyss that we will never return from. I don't want to see that, but I fear that that will take place before things truly take a turn for the better. I hope and I pray not. Mm-hmm. I hope and I pray not, because I am tired of fighting. I am tired of being on the front lines. You know, my mind is tired. My heart is heavy, and I want some peace. But I will not purchase that peace on the cost of one more life.
And you said that last year at one of the rallies, the biggest one in the area, your direct quote was, "We are done dying."
We are. We have to be.
I want to take a listen to that again. This is from the biggest rally in the Twin Ports in early June, shortly after the death of George Floyd.
First off, my name is Kim Young, and I'm an elder in the African Heritage community here. I wasn't scheduled to speak, but I was called last night by my sisters, my Native sisters, and asked to come and say a few words. I've led many of these marches over the year. Many of these rallies over the years. I want every white person right now to raise your hand. Do Black Lives Matter to you?
Yes!
Then you need to tear down the racist system that perpetuates the racism and systemic oppression. I don't want you to tear down buildings. The foundation of this country is rotten. The house that sits upon this foundation is tinkering on the brink of collapse.
Yeah.
One swift wind will tear it down, and that's what we are demanding. We're no longer asking. We're no longer begging.
Our Boston Tea Party was this week. You want peace in these streets? We can't tear down the systems of oppression and racism in this country because we didn't build them. It was built into the Constitution, which your forefathers wrote, not mine. Mine was in the hold of a slave ship on the way over here. Mine fought in the Revolutionary War and then was told, oh, we didn't fight for your freedom. You can go back out in the fields. Mine was fought for by my father and my grandfather who fought in wars for this country and couldn't even sit in the PX during World War II with the white German prisoners to get a cup of coffee. We are traumatized and I'm not okay. I'm not gonna stay on this microphone long because I promised my daughter I would come over here and speak and go back. Because of this COVID, I'm a vulnerable adult. But this was that important that I put my bra on, my righteous armor. My righteous armor. I came back from retirement. I retired to take care of my body and my soul and my family. And yes, I'm a grandmother raising two young black grandsons, and I want them to live. I want us all to not be inundated with the tragedies that are now becoming classic TV to show a black man's dead body on the TV. We are standing here today for justice for George and every other black name on the list that has been killed by police brutality, by police misconduct, by police bullets. Where we stand with signs in front of them while white armed men storm capitals and go home to their families. Don't let them take our movement. Don't let them take our power. And you ain't gonna take our lives no more, cause we are done dying!
We just heard from Superior activist Kim Young at the biggest rally last year in the Twin Ports shortly following the death of George Floyd. Kim joins us by phone from her home in Superior. I'm struck that you mentioned armed insurrectionists, and yet you were referring to those at state capitals. This was well before the January 6th insurrection, and you were warning that these actions show that this country could go either way.
Mm-hmm. So January 6th insurrection showed that clearly. And if anybody still thinks that was just a joke, it was a ploy, whatever, that's all well and fine until somebody died. And now you're denying the deaths of these people that was incited by our former president. We can't keep going like this. This is not a dog and pony show. This is not a reality TV show. This is real life, and people are dying.
Anything specific to Northwest Wisconsin or Northeast Minnesota?
Police reform in the Duluth Superior, both departments. Training, it needs to be seriously looked at by the community and its leaders and our political figures. That needs to be addressed. Less lethal uses of force, no chokeholds. We need to demilitarize our police departments. They don't need to have military-grade weapons to do what? To kill Americans on American soil? No. We have to make some changes, or else we are not going to make it.
Although the police reform issues very much affect African Americans and Native Americans, we've had the studies that show the disproportionate use of force against those groups by our local police departments. A lot of what you're saying affects everybody.
It's everybody, because we are all culpable in it. At this day and age, knowing what we have known for 400 years, what we have endured, what we have experienced, we cannot sit back and let anybody else decide our fate in the social justice arena, in the global world. We can no longer allow our lives, our livelihoods, our education, and our experience to be glossed over, whitewashed, and used against us to quell us from rising up and speaking up. Can't do it.
Kim Young, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me today, Robin.
Coming up, Bill and Kate Iles tell us about 60 weeks of online concerts after this.
In worn out pages, there were cut-out pictures
for a few stolen hours. You'll be all right.
With the mask mandates largely lifted, you might be all right venturing out to hear live music again. Or you could continue to do so from the comfort of your living room. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. For the last year, singer-songwriter duo Bill and Kate Isles have been streaming into your living room or mobile device with weekly online concerts. Before that, they appeared on our show, and here they are again to tell us what they've been doing. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Bill and Kate, or I should say, Kate and Bill Isles.
Thank you, Robin. I love that. I introduced us the same way, so appreciate that.
Oh, no, I introduced us from the artist's point of view. I'm on the left, she's on the right. So Bill and Kate Isles. But she's introducing us from the audience's point of view, which is Kate and Bill Isles.
That's a pretty all good right. answer. But I'm going to challenge you once more on that. For the online shows, your left is always somebody else's right, and nobody could ever figure it out when you're doing a Zoom and they say, okay, let's go to the person down the right. And that takes up another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So what have you been doing for the last year?
Well, Kate is working full-time at Miller Hill Subaru since November. Mm-hmm. And I did a big project at our cabin last summer. I put in well and septic. And so now we have a bathroom and a kitchen there. And it was fun to do.
Oh, there's the key word, fun. You know, this might be one of the few silver linings to what is, in all seriousness, a terrible event the last year and a half. So did you write any songs about your construction?
No, I don't write songs when I'm working on stuff. And that's been a problem. So I said this spring, you know, this spring, we're not going to start any projects until I finish three songs. And I got two of them done. You know, one more to go. And then I'll be waiting for the 2x4 prices to come down.
Well, I'm going to ask you about those songs in a minute. But Kate, what about you on a slow day at the dealership? You know, I can imagine in the middle of January, nobody's coming in. Although, I don't know. You got President's Day. Well, no, that's February, right? But anyway, has it led to any inspiration for you?
Yeah, well, at the dealership, it's a new, completely new world for me. So I've been adjusting and I've really been enjoying it in a lot of ways. As far as music goes, I have to say that working a full-time job at a car dealership has made me more excited or interested in being creative outside of the 40-hour work week. And so on Monday night when we pick up our guitars and we have our friends online with us, we love it. And we really look forward to our Monday night.
All right.
For the first 4 years that we knew each other, Kate worked full-time. And then she went to part-time and was more involved in music. This is the first full-time job in our family since 2005.
Mm-hmm. Do I recall correctly, Kate, that was in wine sales?
I was, yeah.
Which is more inspiring for songwriting, wine sales or car sales?
I have to say they're both jobs that I take seriously and I want to do well at the job. But I think, oh my goodness, I feel the need to be creative outside of those full-time jobs. And so, but then to get to that point and really do it and have downtime and quiet time and alone time can be pretty challenging. So I'm very far behind in my songwriting as well, unfortunately.
All right. And we're going to keep the Monday nights for the foreseeable future, or?
Yeah, we don't have any plans to change. We have a studio set up in our basement now and everything's all dialed in and we just go down there and turn it on and say hi to everybody.
Well, you're speaking to me in my studio in my basement, so there we go. It's the new normal. We are speaking with Kate and Bill Isles of Duluth, a singer-songwriter duo. Or if you're looking at them online and your left is my right, then it's Bill and Kate Isles. So it works either way. Are there any particular songs from your previous repertoire that you found really work for what we've been going through for the last year?
Floodwaters is probably a major one. Yeah. It's why, you know, don't go down by the bridge, stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away.
There's and a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
Yeah. And that was last year, last spring, after we talked to you, a random group of Northwoods musicians, kind of headed by Timothy Sodengroves, took our song Floodwaters and made a collaborative video of it. Hmm. And it's had almost 40,000 views on Facebook. they took our structure of our song and then replaced everything with other people playing instruments and other people doing the verse. So we did one half of a verse ourselves and sang along in the chorus, but everybody else took their parts, and it was just a wonderful collaboration. So it's a good pandemic song.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also quite seriously sounds like it's something that, again, we would not have thought of a year and a half ago, right? Until everybody figured out exactly how to do this music syncing online and all. Now that's become a thing, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear Floodwaters by Bill and Kate Isles, accompanied by musical friends.
Don't go down by the bridge. Stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away. There's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away. Down by the bridge, stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away. There's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
Memories you kept in frame, things you thought would never change.
Your morning word was never said, now it's washed along the riverbed.
Don't go down by the bridge, stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away. There's a song, here's a song, used to lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
Thank you.
And that was Floodwaters by our guests, Kate and Bill Isles, and not quite a cast of thousands, but close. So now that you're able to go somewhere, what's on the concert tour schedule, or is there one yet?
There's no tour schedule because Kate's working full-time, and that's the interesting thing about what we've been through is we slowly eased our way
into
a lifestyle of doing music full-time. And then we'd also have other side businesses that we were involved with that didn't require us to be here all the time. But now it's just shut down. So now we're going back into it. I don't know how we could ever get back into the 150, 160 show a year, 50,000 mile driving tour thing. I just don't see that ever happening again because it took years to develop that touring and that circuit. Mm-hmm. And those venues aren't necessarily there anymore. You know, and you have to travel to make a living as a musician. You can't, unless you're hired by school or something, but you really have a hard time making a living at it locally because there just aren't a lot of high-paying gigs. They're wonderful gigs, but they just don't have the budget.
Mm-hmm. Which is no reflection on our local music fans.
Not at all. And those good-paying gigs are here for touring musicians to come through and once in a year.
Right.
But local people don't get... You know, you don't play locally for money. You play locally for exposure.
Community.
And to entertain people. And it's close by home. You don't have to stay overnight anywhere.
And do understand, of course, we have gigs that we've done in Duluth that we absolutely love. And they treat us wonderfully. And they feed us. And we have a great time.
Oh, yes. So wonderful. Where else can you go? You go out and play music for 3 hours, which is playing. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And you get a great meal afterwards. And you get paid besides. And you don't have to drive... you know, 6 hours each way to do the gig and wonder what you're going to do with your dogs. The only way you can make a living at it is if you've worked 6 nights a week. And that's just not, you know, we have most of our gigs this summer, we're playing once a month at each of the venues.
What other songs would you like to highlight and tell us something about?
Well, probably Hobos in the Roundhouse, I would think, because that's our most well-known song. Although we probably featured that last time we did a show with you.
So you know what? So, I was thinking about that, and it occurred to me that, our listeners probably aren't as in tune as you and I are of what exactly we played a year ago, right? I mean, I hope the listeners are really taking notes like that. And then even if they are, well, if this is your big hit, they probably want to hear it again, you know? So.
Yeah, it's in the folk world, it's a big hit for us. In fact, the royalties for this song paid for our house.
Ah.
Well, for 2 weeks.
So tell us about it again. Because, see, even I, with the memory that, yes, we did play it before, I don't remember the entire story, although I thought it had something to do with Wisconsin.
Well, it mentions Prairie du Chien.
There we go.
So my grandfather was a night foreman for the DWP Roundhouse up in Virginia, Minnesota. And... I learned from a cousin a bunch of years ago that he used to sneak the hobos in at night, even though he could have gotten fired for doing that. And I like to write about what I know. And I didn't know that much about hobos until I heard this story that actually was a very important part of our family history. And it's been recorded by 8 or 9 other groups now. And it's probably about 80 artists that do it.
And how did you work Prairie du Chien in there?
Well, I was talking about the hobos in the song. I said... from Akron, which is where I heard the story, in Akron, Ohio, and Hinckley, which is a railroad town in Minnesota, and Prairie du Chien, which is a railroad town in Wisconsin. So I picked 3 railroad towns. And I picked Prairie du Chien because it rhymed with, and there's soldiers and lawyers, and I believe what they're saying.
All right, sounds close enough to me. Let's hear Hobos in a Roundhouse by, in this one I'm going to say, Bill and Kate Isles, since he wrote it.
From 7 to 7, every night of the week, fixing trains in the roundhouse, I work on my feet. And I told my children, I hope the bed bugs don't bite. And I got hobos sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Akron and Hinckley,
contrary to shame. They are soldiers and lawyers, and I believe what they're saying. And I'll rouse them at 4 and they'll head down the line. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Good night, my hobos, rest your vagabond heads. On your old knapsack pillows, in your gunny sack beds. For a few stolen hours, you'll be all right. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Well, they hired a new man to work as a guard. Every morning at sunrise, he checks out the yard. But for now I won't trust him, though he seems pretty nice. 'Cause I got hobos sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Good night, my hobos, rest your vagabond heads. On your old knapsack pillows, in your gunny sack beds. For a few stolen hours, you'll be all right. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Well, I ask my Savior, what should I do? If I'm caught helping hobos, my job could be through. And I heard the answer so clear and so bright. Are my hobos sleeping in your roundhouse tonight? Good night, my hobos, rest your vagabond heads. On your old knapsack pillows, in your gunny sack beds. For a few stolen hours, you'll be all. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. For a few stolen hours, you'll be all right. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Good night, boys.
And that's Hobos in the Roundhouse by Bill and Kate Isles. The next one is going to be by Kate and Bill Isles, because I'm going to ask Kate, can you recommend one to take out the segment?
I think it would probably be Little Blue. It's a song that came about when my mother, who was an oil painter, she asked which painting of hers I would like, and I said I would love Little Blue. It's a small landscape where my mother and my cousin Mary were plein air painting along the Little Blue River in Nebraska. And actually, I was sitting in front of it one day with my guitar, and I started picking a pattern on my guitar, and that became the song Little Blue.
It's kind of the Willa Cather of folk songs.
Yeah. All right. We've been speaking with Bill and Kate Isles, a.k.a. Kate and Bill Isles, depending on which way you're looking at them on your screen. You can see them on your screen on Facebook Live on Monday nights. Isles is spelled I-S-L-E-S. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Robin.
Take care.
Little Blue.
eyes watched a winding road that wandered aimlessly among unshaded meadows, a farm, a pasture rife with black-eyed Susan's level fields. These comprised your life.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, though it's nowhere near as world-changing as the death of George Floyd, it's still tragic. Duluth had a homicide last week. What happened, and can you put it in context?
Yeah, over the weekend, Duluth recorded its first homicide of the year, and Duluth typically sees, you know, maybe two or three homicides in a given year. And this involved a teenager, a 17-year-old, shooting into a crowd and killing a man, shooting him in the head at about 7 p.m. on Saturday in downtown Duluth. He fled and was quickly apprehended and was charged with second-degree murder this week. There are other suspects in this. Police say that there were more shots fired, possibly toward the suspect as he was fleeing, as this was just a bit of a brawl that got out of hand. And no motive is known yet, and hopefully we can learn more about what caused this and put the community at ease. It was definitely a tense time in an area where this doesn't happen very often.
Well, on a much lighter subject, though, one involving international intrigue, if you will, we're still having issues of Americans being able to cross into Canada. What's the latest, and is there a solution?
Well, there's a solution for about 120 Americans, residents of the Northwest Angle, you know, that chimney up at the top of Minnesota that's cut off by land from the rest of the state. Those residents are now able to get through without pre- and post-arrival COVID-19 testing. However, the government, Canadian government, did extend its border restrictions until at least June 21st. So we are still looking at more deliberations about possible vaccine passports or allowing more people in with or without COVID tests. But as of right now, if you want to go to Canada, you need a very good reason to get in and get back out.
Well, back in Duluth or the harbor, you've been reporting on the hot real estate market. Can I get something with a lake view out of every window?
Well, you can if you're picked to be the right person to be the new caretaker of Canal Park's historic North Pier Lighthouse. So the Duluth Harbor North Pierhead Light, as it's officially known, is on offer from the U.S. General Services Administration to get a new caretaker. The lighthouse is free if you're a government agency, nonprofit, or community development organization And it has to be dedicated to, you know, education and preservation. It will be sold if it's not transferred to a public body or nonprofit. So I guess get your documents in order. And, you know, otherwise, you could look around the region for a house with a view, but get ready to pay way over asking, because the trend right now in Twin Ports real estate, both in Duluth and Superior, is, you know, sellers are getting every penny they're asking for and often more. On the Minnesota side, the median sale price reached a new record high of over $216,000 last month. On the Wisconsin side, we got close to a record median sale price of $165,000. So all in all, you know, I'm being told by realtors that you're getting multiple offers, you're getting over asking, and there's just not enough on the market.
Well, Danny, on the Wisconsin side, there is some political jostling going on concerning the State Natural Resources Board.
Yeah, and this board, you know, is the policy setting board for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And the chair of that board, Fred Prane, has decided not to step down following the expiration of his term. And why that may be an issue is because Democratic Governor Tony Evers announced the appointments of two new nominees to the board, one being Sandy D. Noss of Ashland. She's got more than 30 years of conservation experience and has worked as a county conservationist and teaches at the Ashland High School. And she essentially cannot take a seat on the board until the Senate confirms her nomination by Governor Evers. And typically in the past, what's happened is that board members, when their term expires, they step down or resign to make way for the incoming nominees. But that isn't happening this time around. The chair says that he wants to remain on the board because he thinks that the board can use his leadership right now before the nominee is confirmed by the Senate. And, you know, under state statutes, he is allowed to remain on the board past the expiration of his term. It goes back to a 1964 Supreme Court ruling in Wisconsin that allows people to hold over in their position until that new appointee is confirmed. The reason why this might become an ordeal is because the state Senate is Republican controlled, and, you know, Republican lawmakers have held off for up to 2 years on some of Governor Evers' appointments.
Well, that's not the only dispute between the governor and the Republican legislature. There's another one about Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, and this one is not anything new. They've been fighting about this for years, but a special session was called by Governor Tony Evers to expand Medicaid in the state and accept $1 billion from the federal government. That session was scheduled for Tuesday, and the Republican-controlled state legislature took no action. They basically gaveled in and gaveled out in a matter of seconds. But this expansion would extend Medicaid health benefits to an additional 91,000 people in Wisconsin if it were accepted, because it raises the income cap on the federal poverty level from 100% to 138%. So for like a family of four, that would be a family making $26,500 right now. But if it's raised, you know, that cap could be up to $36,570. Republicans are opposing this expansion because they think it's reckless. They see it as an unnecessary increase in welfare. And they argue that it could saddle Wisconsin with additional costs into the future and force more expensive private plans for others.
Well, rounding out those disputes between the governor and the Republican lawmakers, there's yet another one over transgender athletes competing in women's sports.
Yeah, Republican lawmakers have introduced a couple of bills that would bar transgender women and girls from playing on school sports teams that align with their gender identities. So under one bill, any public school or school that receives public money for K-12 education in Wisconsin would be required to divide their sports teams by sex and prevent any student who was born a male at birth from competing on girls' teams. There's another bill that would basically require the same policies for the University of Wisconsin system schools and state technical colleges. Supporters of the bills basically argue that the change would protect female athletes from injury or competitive disadvantage. There were parents and student athletes who spoke in favor of these bills, again, voicing concern about safety or competitive fairness. One person said that every male on the female podium displaces a deserving female. But transgender athletes who spoke argued that they would like to think that they add something to sports by, you know, enhancing diversity across a variety of sports. And also that they're not looking to get an upper hand. They just want to belong and be a part of their school and participate in school sports.
All right. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week.
You don't have to ride Jim Crow. No, you don't have to ride Jim Crow. On June the 3rd, the High Court said.
Three quarters of a century ago, the Supreme Court on June the 3rd, 1946, issued a landmark ruling that would begin to dismantle racial segregation. Yet that was largely ignored. In a special radio presentation of the public television documentary You Don't Have to Ride Jim Crow, we'll hear the inspiring story of the pioneers who offered up their freedom to lay the groundwork for the civil rights movement. That's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
I like old fences where they've fallen into disrepair. A few slats missing and the wood is there.
Old fences bring to me a sense of time of history, stretched between the posts of faded memories.